they wouldn't allow us to step into their branches and deposit cash if we had it. We had to go to a specific branch, one location that was exclusively used for cash transfers for cannabis operators. So like it was just such a nuisance. We had to drive like 2 hours. We had to send like our drivers with cash in the car, which is an enormous risk.
This episode is brought to you by Midwest Bitcoin Summit. My guest today spent years as engineering director in the cannabis industry, and he kept running into the same wall, a legal business that no bank would touch. So before we start, I want you to think about this. What happens when you build something real and the financial system treats you like a criminal anyway? Welcome back to the Bitcoin Nova. Today, I have Andrew Tillman with me, president of the Midwest Bitcoin Summit. Welcome back, Andrew. It's nice to have you here again.
Hey, thanks for having me back. Nice to see you, Stacey.
Yeah, so it's going to be an interesting conversation today talking about the intersection of these two worlds. And I would like to start off by asking you to tell us about your work in the cannabis industry.
Yeah, so my work in the cannabis industry, like professionally, kind of started in Ohio, but I guess like quote unquote, like it started in Michigan when I was coming out of college. I helped a friend start up the first original medical marijuana processing lab in Michigan. So this was like 2015-ish. So like I had a lot of experience prior to going into like cannabis professionally in Ohio. We actually like did all of the, you know, butane extractions. We were doing distillation, filtration, separations, isolations, all sorts of like, you know, unit operations and principles of chemical engineering. And like when you think about cannabis, you don't really think about like engineering or science. But when you get into the processing of cannabis, it is just that. It's just pure science, just pure like chemical engineering, unit operations fundamentally. And so it's like a perfect fit actually. But when I went to Ohio, you know, I started as a normal project engineer inside the paper industry. And, I did that for a little bit and decided, you know, paper engineering is not for me. This is a horrible environment. And, you know, I've always was kind of like looking for a way to get back into cannabis because it was like a fun adventure for me. And I've always been involved in cannabis since I was young. You know, I started trying to grow weed when I was 15 and my parents caught me, you know, and then you fast forward like a decade and I'm 25 years old and we're actually doing a legal grow at my parents' house, you know, in Michigan, which was super ironic and funny for me. But anyways, when I was in Ohio specifically, I was working in the paper industry, looking for cannabis jobs, looking to exit the paper, you know, business altogether. And it just so happened when I was living in Lima, Ohio, there was a medical marijuana processing lab that went up 10 minutes from me. It was in a small town called Spencerville. And I just was like, oh, I should probably reach out to them. I had no way to get into contact with these individuals. So I drove out there and went to this farm where this processing lab was, you know, supposed to be. And I reached out to like the farm hands and, they were like, you know, go away, dude. I don't know who you are. But anyways, long story short, I got in contact with the owner and she didn't really know what she was doing at all. She just had a license and she just had the real estate and she had a lot of money behind her. And so I told her who I was and told her I had a lot of experience in this. I'm a chemical engineer. I understand this like very well. I can get the entire company up and running. And she was like, all right, yeah, let's do it. And so I started the entire business for her.
You were 25 when that happened?
I was 27 at that time. Just turned 27. I went from doing like large corporate engineering projects. You know, we built a paper mill in 2 years between myself and like 23 other engineers. And that was a $500 million project in 2018. COVID hit and I joined the cannabis company right in COVID as it was like starting to unfold. But yeah, I was 27 years old taking on an entire startup, you know, from the ground up. And so it was just a building. There's just walls and floors. And so I built the entire process out. There's a few pieces of equipment that were procured before I came in, but I added the remaining pieces and, you know, standardized the processes, built all the SOPs, built the product, you know, the initial products that we launched with, which included, you know, different variations of vapes, gummies, you know, different edibles. And, you know, I built the company essentially, you know, so it was really fun for me. You know, I had my own employees and, the whole time I'm like this Bitcoin maxi. And so it was fun for me to be in this world, it's an extremely competitive world of cannabis and also be a Bitcoiner and just like going through COVID and, you know, the huge bull market that was kind of unfolding at the time. And I'm just orange pilling my employees so relentlessly. And so everybody's buying Bitcoin around me and yeah, it was pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, that's how I got into cannabis. Just because of, you know, right place, right time, right focus, right experience leading up to that point. But man, it's a very, very difficult industry to operate in. It's extremely difficult. You know, it's a commoditizing market, meaning like, you know, in the early days when like the market's expanding and maturing, you know, the money's great. The money's just flowing in because like all the early movers, the, you know, the initial people that make it to market first, they're the only game in town. But as the market starts to mature, more licenses get issued, supply increases, you only have a, you know, some fixed amount of people that use cannabis or, you know, medically use cannabis. And so the competition starts to like really accelerate. And then you get this like kind of race to the bottom of who's the cheapest, because at the end of the day, brand loyalty doesn't really exist in cannabis beyond like maybe a few different brands. And so it's really what's the cheapest. And so everybody's kind of just commoditizing rapidly. And as these markets start to mature, these operators get squeezed like crazy. And coming from Michigan, this happened in Michigan, like almost like within 5 years, they issued so many licenses. There's so much like black market marijuana coming into the you know, legal market. So this gray area of like introduction of supply, that most operators in Michigan at that time were literally operating at a loss or at best break even. And they were just trying to weather the storm of like being a cannabis operator, which most people think just prints money, but they don't. And like they're just like, you know, barely scraping by. So cannabis is so competitive. It's so hard to operate in. And there's so many different reasons for that. I mean, I'm sure we're going to unpack them here in a second.
Yeah, that reminds me of how when people think that grocery prices are too high and they think that the grocery store is, you know, raising their prices too high, but really they're just, the margins are very low and they're being squeezed, and it's a very similar sounding situation. I love how you took the opportunity to look for something with your experience and see that there was somebody who might need your expertise, and you actually went and found that. So that's really cool to think at that age you can just go create something and say, you know, there's something missing here and I could fill that gap. So that's a really cool thing about you, that you were able to, you know, to help in that way and create something for yourself at the same time. So yeah, that's fascinating to think that you could just take, you know, empty walls and just build it, like you're engineering, but you're also building it out. You know, you did so much when it comes to that. And then, so when you said you were a Bitcoiner and it was around 2020, so was that, I mean, you were already going to college, you were already learning or getting your degrees. And when did the Bitcoin journey come into play compared to the cannabis?
Well, cannabis started when I was like 15.
Well, yeah.
As a degenerate kid, I hang out with the wrong friends and stuff. You get into, you know, trouble and stuff. So I've always been fascinated with cannabis from a young age, but I always looked at it like, oh, this is cool, it's fun. But like, man, you can make money off of this. This is interesting. You know, you can just grow this in your backyard and then sell it, you know, allegedly, you know. I'm not saying I did any of this, but anyways, I always looked at it from a business perspective. Cause I always had like, you know, just kind of a business native mind, which is the same reason why I got into Bitcoin. Because like the business related mindset that I've always had from a young age stems out of like this need to protect myself, because I've always like been very concerned about, you know, money's not guaranteed, job placement's not guaranteed, you know, stability is not guaranteed. So how do you like perpetually protect yourself financially? And I think we maybe talked about this on the last podcast where, you know, that came from a young experience when I was 7, my dad lost his job, and, you know, it was very terrifying for me at the time. But nonetheless, like, I mean, what was your original question? Sorry, we got off on a little tangent there.
Oh yeah, no, I was just thinking about your whole journey, just connecting those two worlds about Bitcoin and when you got into it compared to when you got into cannabis. But yeah, knowing that you went to the paper industry and then you got back into using your expertise for the cannabis industry, it's just interesting thinking about how the cannabis industry, like you said, you felt like you were this degenerate or some kind of like bad kid doing bad things. Yeah. And then, you know, it comes from that part of your life to now seeing the way the world has shaped, to having these dispensaries and people getting medical marijuana or recreational marijuana, and how much it has evolved, and you helped grow that space. So it's interesting to see the evolution from something that's treated as a bad thing and something looked down upon to now becoming, you know, therapeutic and something that, you know, isn't considered bad. Like, you don't feel bad doing this. So Bitcoin's pretty similar, because, you know, people would think of it as this underground currency that, you know, people just didn't think of it as the dollar or the traditional system. So it's something that kind of is looked down upon, but now how much it's changed since it started. So that's an interesting comparison between the two.
Yeah, I would say, you know, like the Bitcoin journey, that they both of them kind of stem out of the same, you know, origin point, which is me trying to solve my money problem, right? And so like Bitcoin, just to give a quick context of like, I was introduced to Bitcoin in 2011 when I was in college, and I was at a fraternity and some guy ordered something from the Silk Road. And I was just like, how did you get this? You know, I can't remember, like Sweden or something. And he showed me his Bitcoin address. He's like, oh, I paid with Bitcoin. And I was just like, I don't know what you said to me, or I don't know what this is. Let's go party, you know. And like you fast forward into 2015. And my friend Yash, who's one of the co-founders of Midwest Bitcoin Summit and sits on the board of the Bitcoin Scholarship Foundation, he's the one that truly orange pilled me. He's the one that, you know, Yash and I have been friends since we were 15 or 16. And he, every single like weekend would come up and like, you know, visit me in college while he was going to community college. And he would just relentlessly tell me like, you got to listen to like this podcast. You need to read this book. Like we need to buy Bitcoin. And I was like, dude, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm in engineering school. I'm trying to like keep my head above water, and just relentlessly would not leave it alone. But Yash understood it very early because he's from Uzbekistan. He has a lot of family back in Uzbekistan. So he has like this experience of working with Western Union and constantly doing like, you know, money transfers abroad, you know, remittance payments essentially. And when he discovered Bitcoin, it was just immediate use case of, oh, I don't have to go through a third party that's going to take a percentage of my money just to send it back to my family in Uzbekistan. I can just send them Bitcoin, you know? And so immediately just like that use case clicks. And so for me as a dumb American, young, dumb American who could care less about anything really, it was like, it took me a slow, gradual amount of time to start to understand it, to start to believe it. And really it was just like, oh, I'm going to be rich. That's what like got me hooked, you know? Because in 2017, I watched it run from, you know, where I was buying at $200 all the way up to, you know, damn near $20,000 at like $19,700. And it just exploded my brain. I'm like, oh my gosh, what is this asset? And then I went deep into the rabbit hole. And then I started understanding like, what is the problem with money? Why is this asset going to like solve some problem I don't understand? Maybe I need to understand the problem. And then I go deep into fiat, go deep into the history of money, go deep into like how the world actually works. And I'm just like full-fledged. By 2018, I am a full-fledged hardcore Bitcoin maximalist. Never had a shitcoin phase really outside of Litecoin. You know, I bought Litecoin early on when I thought, oh, silver and gold narrative, you know, Bitcoin, Litecoin, and then, you know, immediately sold it. But, you know, like my, you know, the Bitcoin story really started with Yash.
It's like, funny how long it takes for people to hear about Bitcoin from somebody and how long it takes for them to actually start to ask those questions about what money really is. And once you get into it, it's not a very long amount of time for people to transition to full Bitcoin. I feel like once you start to get into the space, you realize why Bitcoin's different. But just, I love the idea of him getting into it because he had a use case. He didn't want to give a percentage to a middleman to be able to send money back to his family. So that's, for him, it was the use case. For you, you're thinking, okay, I want to grow my wealth. But when people are short on time, you were in college when you first heard about it, you weren't thinking, let me spend extra time that I don't have. I want to have fun too, besides, you know, take care of my degrees and get them. You actually want to be able to enjoy some of your life too, not spend every last second trying to research the monetary system of the world. So it's a lot of it is how much time do people have to actually spend to do this? But it's so great that you eventually did. It's so great that you had him who had that experience and the use case for it. But then the thing that you we wanted to get into too is because of the cannabis industry, coming from that world and seeing the space, and you're realizing as you're learning about this monetary system and what money really is, and you ended up orange pilling people while you were working there, while you were building it. So you already understood these things that were going on, and you how was it seeing that, you know, using cash only? Like how was that, or how is it still in the cannabis industry when it comes to the banking system?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think most people don't really recognize how much control there is in the banking system because it doesn't really apply to them. But working in cannabis, it really illuminated like, okay, you make the rules and we all have to follow them, and you can make rules arbitrarily and you can just kind of like gatekeep this entire marketplace of what we call banking. But, you know, in cannabis, we felt this every single day. You can't even use a bank if you're a cannabis operator, but, you know, it's because it's a Schedule I substance. Now it's being reclassified as Schedule III, but we had to use credit unions. Credit unions were the only ones that would be like, you know, and not all of them, just like a few would stand up and say, yeah, yeah, we'll take you on as a high risk client, but you're going to pay for it. And so as a cannabis operator, like we had enormous monthly premiums. Like we were paying like, I think it was like close to $1,500 a month just to have the account open. And then every time we did a transaction, it was immensely, you know, it was I don't know, I think 3-4% like a fee charge on top of that. And they wouldn't allow us to like step into their branches and deposit cash if we had it. We had to go to a specific branch, one location that was exclusively used for cash transfers for cannabis operators. So like it was just such a nuisance. We had to drive like 2 hours. We had to send like our drivers with cash in the car, which is an enormous risk, to go deposit at a specific location, or we had to pay for like a third party to do this. So, you know, it was just like abuse on all ends. Even the friendly institutions of, you know, the credit unions were still kind of, you know, twisting our arm and taking us for all we're worth while we're like struggling as a cannabis operator. And it was just like, you know, it was a lose-lose situation all around. And, you know, as a Bitcoiner, I'm just kind of like, why aren't we using Bitcoin, you know? And from the state level, they don't even allow it. So the regulations gatekeep as well. And so the regulators, they're unfavorable at the time. You know, they restrict how you can transact in cannabis. And the whole thing is in cash, which is extremely dangerous for everybody involved, right? You have to have cash as a customer going into a retail operator, you know, or dispensary. And then the dispensary has to take in all this cash every single day. And then they have the risk of being robbed. And they plenty of retail operators or dispensaries got robbed while I was in the industry in Ohio, which is like the worst case scenario. And so like their workaround, one of the workarounds, which is just like, I don't know, like it's just like the most clumsy way of doing this. They basically have a way where you can charge your debit card, like you're, you know, paying at whatever checkout, like POS system, but it's being charged as a ATM transfer. So it's like getting cash back every single time. So you have to do like if you're going to buy $15 worth of cannabis, you have to charge $20 and then they give you change back. That's how it works. But the credit card fee, or, you know, the ATM fee rather, that charges to it as well. So it's like a 3% fee added on top of it. So every layer of the financial system is just like taking money from you.
It just sounds like a gangster just being like, yeah, you could use this if you pay me a percentage. It's crazy. I don't understand it at all. It makes no sense. I don't know how they could, I don't know how that could happen or how they could get away with doing that. The other thing is the gigantic fee that you guys had to pay or all cannabis, you know, operators and businesses and the whole industry has to pay these fees. And you were talking about it being like the margins being small. So if they weren't charging these insane fees, it would be more beneficial. So that's crazy to think about. And then, yeah, the risk is huge. You're just, it reminds you of when you hear about when you first discover or look into money and the history of money, and you hear about gold and, you know, people traveling with gold and getting robbed and, you know, having their fortune taken from them because they just had to carry it all with them. So it's very dangerous. It's not a good thing. It makes you still feel like you're a criminal in a way, because you're just like carrying a bag of cash and then somebody could just like run up to you and you're like, what is this? I'm supposed to be running a business that's allowed, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you know, the entire cannabis industry has so many issues. You know, it's cash, obviously cash nominated, it's cash heavy. You know, you cannot get lending. You can't get a bank loan, can't get a business loan. So it's all self-financed. So it's a bunch of, you know, people that are passionate about cannabis that put up the money to start up these companies themselves. You know, they have regulatory issues. They have, you know, the payment issues, as I said. You know, there's just, it's just like all around, all the things that Bitcoin offers as like an independent monetary platform and you know, a payments protocol, a store value asset, everything that Bitcoin is, it is perfectly primed for the cannabis industry. Yeah, it solves all their problems. It's like the beautiful match made in heaven. It's just a, you know, it's a educational gap. That's all. You know, they're already Bitcoiners without even knowing it. Every cannabis person is pro freedom. They're anti-establishment. They're anti-government. Like, sounds familiar. Sounds like a lot of Bitcoiners I know.
Right. So you already see the connection between these two worlds. You see the ethos and, you know, what they stand for. And that's what I was actually going to ask you was, what would you say to somebody who has never bought Bitcoin or you know, learned about Bitcoin, why this would matter to them, or why they should actually I don't know, start learning about it. But you just already touched on that, like about how, you know, the pro freedom aspect. And I feel like it really is such a similar world with similar ideals.
Yeah. I mean, when I talk to cannabis folks, I mean, when you talk to anybody, when you're trying to orange pill anybody, you have to like kind of, you know, zero in on where does their value lie? You know, are they humanitarians? Are they, you know, pro freedom, leave me alone, kind of libertarian, small government, whatever it may be. And like, you know, any angle that you have to take, you can like kind of formulate that Bitcoin story for that person. But a lot of them, I mean, you know, cannabis folks are just like, I want my freedom to do whatever I want. You know, leave me alone. This is my body. I can use whatever medicine I want to heal my, you know, conditions. And there should be no say in it. And like less government's better, right? So when, you know, you talk about Bitcoin as a money that's, you know, separate from the state, it's independent. There's, you know, it's completely decentralized. There's no corporation. There's no government. There's no individual that can change anything. It's equal in all playing fields for every single participant in the network. Like that's the type of narrative that resonates with them. Especially when they're getting high, you know, because they're like, oh, shit, this is awesome, you know?
Yeah, actually getting high would probably get you to ask those orange pilling questions, like to actually ask what money is and really start thinking about it. That would be a really great way to ponder on that. So the other thing is, too, the way that you would look for something that needs your expertise, the way that you found this location that you built the business from the ground up over there. So what you're doing now, the reason this whole conversation is about these two worlds is because you found another way to combine the two worlds. So can you tell everyone a little bit about what you've built?
Yeah. You know, so we're doing the inaugural Midwest Bitcoin Summit, which is the first only Bitcoin conference in the Midwest, in the heartland of America. There's never been one before. So that's, you know, kind of history in the making right there. And, you know, to run with that, with the Midwest Bitcoin Summit, we fortunately have on our team one of the co-founders, Lenny Berry, who owns OCHBS, which is the Ohio Cannabis Health and Business Summit. He's a good friend of mine. We met in the cannabis industry, and we were partners in the industry for a long time. And I've been, you know, orange pilling Lenny for the last 6 years. We decided, you know, as we started the Midwest Bitcoin Summit, we need to like amplify this. And like the goal of the Midwest Bitcoin Summit is revitalization of the Midwest region, because the Midwest has been hollowed out over the last 50 years. And there's a lot of cities that are just, you know, the quote unquote Rust Belt cities that, well, it's really our aim. That's what we're trying to correct for, you know, and there's a whole story to unpack there. But with Lenny owns the third largest cannabis conference in the United States. OCHBS has grown tremendously over the last 5-6 years. We are running both Midwest Bitcoin Summit and OCHBS in the same venue, the same days, the same times, separate events, but they're running in tandem. And so there's 7,000 additional cannabis attendees, 150, 200 exhibitors, hundreds of different companies, you know, 80 to 100 speakers that come to the OCHBS Cannabis Conference. We're giving all of them free access to the Midwest Bitcoin Summit Expo, which is going to be like this reciprocal kind of relationship. You know, the Bitcoin people can come to the cannabis side, cannabis can go to the Bitcoin side. But the idea is we want to orange pill all the cannabis people while we're doing the first inaugural Midwest Bitcoin Summit. And I've been priming this industry for the last 3 years, or three, 4 years now. I've been talking to the cannabis operators. I've been giving presentations about, you know, Bitcoin is a strategic asset on the balance sheet for a cannabis operator. It's like, probably a good half of the actual 7,000 people that will come from cannabis are already either in Bitcoin or crypto more broadly. And so this is going to be the perfect crossover event where, you know, Midwest Bitcoin Summit, we're targeting 5,000 attendees. You know, we'll have 150, 160 speakers across our four stages. You know, we're targeting 100 exhibitors in our expo hall. But with the 5,000 attendees from Midwest Bitcoin Summit, plus the 7,000 attendees that come from the cannabis side, and this is going to be one of the largest events of all time for the first Bitcoin conference. You know, it will probably be the largest conference for this year if we can pull this off. It's going to be insane.
I'm so excited. I can't wait. I cannot believe how amazing, just to think about that many people in the cannabis industry being in Bitcoin or crypto already, and then just thinking about giving free access to both sides, you know, so that they can cross over and just learn more about each thing is, I mean, look at like just thinking about how you can see something that needs connecting and build it from the ground up. It's amazing that you actually are doing it, you know, and you've done it before, you're doing it again. And just seeing that this is going to be, you know, just like you said, the Midwest needs it. You know, we need to build up the Midwest. And also, as far as myself, I was so honored when you asked me to be a speaker at the Midwest Bitcoin Summit as well. So I'm excited to speak on a panel with other Bitcoiners in the Midwest and, you know, speak about what we've been building and how we're spreading the word about this thing. So it's amazing to be invited and to be actually able to speak at this summit. So I cannot wait to see. I mean, I didn't realize there was that many attendees from the cannabis side. Yeah. So this is really exciting.
Yeah, super happy to have you coming. Of course, you're coming, Stacey. Like, we know each other in person. You know, I think beyond just doing a panel, you know, I think you're a great moderator. So depending on your, you know, personal desires of what you want to do at the Midwest Bitcoin Summit, maybe we'll have you do some moderating as well, since you did a phenomenal job at the All Geld Bitcoin Summit, you know, a few months back. So, you know, kind of the sky's the limit. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a massive event. I'm super stoked. It's going to be exactly what the Midwest has needed. You know, so many of these conferences have been in regions of the United States economy that have been propped up by the fiat system, right? Like, this is what, like, is so unique about our conference. We are doing it in a region that is like an afterthought. It's like something no one even like really knows where Ohio is if you're from the West Coast, right? So this entire region has been decimated because we have the reserve currency, you know, the US dollar is the reserve currency of the world. And we like literally just print USD as our major export, and we run massive trade deficits. And so the manufacturing base of the United States has been hollowed out tremendously since 1971. And so all these jobs and this like really beautiful place to live outside of the winters, I'll give people a free pass to talk shit about the winters. The winters are horrible, but there's nothing better than a Midwest summer. Okay. But this was once like one of the greatest regions to live in. You know, you could have a normal job and be in manufacturing, producing a good that was sold by Americans to the rest of the world. And you could live a very comfortable life, you know, with one salary. You could have a nice house, two cars in the garage. You could have a 4-person family, and you'd be fine with one job. And that was like erased, you know, and this region has just been kind of ignored for a long time. And I'm a Midwester through and through, born and raised, have always lived in the Midwest. I love this region. And so what we're trying to do is, you know, let's showcase that. Let's bring this back. Let's use Bitcoin as the most powerful tool to revitalize this region for every single individual, every single family, every small business, every city, every state. And, you know, I mean, I think it's a disservice to just put the Bitcoin conferences in Vegas or in Nashville or California or Texas. You know, there's a lot of Bitcoiners in this region that don't have the time. They don't have the ability to go that distance. They don't have the capital to make that work. And they don't have the money to pay a $500 general admission ticket. You know, like our general admission tickets are $50, or actually it's $100, but it's $50 to get in if you want to just go to the expo hall. Mm-hmm. You know, we're making it cheaper, more accessible, and we're highlighting a region that has been the most negatively impacted by the fiat reserve currency in the United States. So, you know, this is like the Bitcoin ethos, you know, it makes sense. Yeah.
It's so true. And Midwesterners are just like, when you think of Midwesterners, you think of just good people, like, I don't know, just like hardworking, grit, you know, just people that are,
yeah.
And just to think that it's been ignored, you know, this huge, massive portion of the United States has been ignored. But now people like me and you, we met recently, and not recently, you know, probably like less than a year ago. But the people in the Midwest have been connecting, and they were connecting through Bitcoin. You know, so mm-hmm. people from your world and people, you know, you've built all these things in the cannabis industry, but you are a Bitcoiner. I'm a Bitcoiner. I also am a fan of cannabis, you know, so it's like we are not, but so many of us intersect, you know, and connect in this space. And knowing that we are coming together and you're helping with that. So it's not just us coming together in these little meetups that we've been having. That's how we met. And but just seeing that there's so much skill within this community and the people are, you know, have this different way of thinking and this goodness, like the ethos, you know, like you said, like the Bitcoin ethos is like the same ethos the cannabis industry shares, the same ethos that Midwesterners share. It's just a really amazing opportunity to be able to go and visit an event like this. And for that amount of money to be able to enter a conference like that with two whole different industries. And again, yeah, if you're in this entire section of the Midwest, like you said, you don't have to go get on a plane to fly. You could take a road trip, you know, so it's actually amazing. And I can't wait to connect with even more Midwest Bitcoin builders because it is like the heart of America.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's so many unsung heroes in the Midwest. And so as I like approach this journey of starting up the Midwest Bitcoin Summit, I've met so many people from different states in the Midwest where I'm just like, I didn't know you existed, you know, and a lot of people don't know these people exist. I mean, outside of their maybe like immediate circles in that state, but it's wild. I mean, there's so many people building, so many miners, there's so many developers, you know, people in like the top northern part of Michigan who are developing, you know, wallets that are, you know, Decoy Wallets, one of our sponsors, which is very interesting. You know, it's like it's a fake wallet that if you're getting like wrench attacked now, like you have this ability to like have this, you know, alternative account that shows up that like it's like a complete facade for the attacker. It makes it look like, you know, it's your actual account. It's interesting. But that guy he's just in the middle of like northern Michigan, you know?
What's like the name of that?
It's called Decoy Wallet.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, there's just so much stuff going on that you would never hear about. And, you know, and it's great that Bitcoin has such a huge following and there's influencers with 250,000, 500,000, 1,000,000 followers. And like, they're like the, you know, top people in our industry and they're celebrities at this point. But man, there's so many people in the real economy building real things that are boots on the ground that keep this thing ticking. And like, that's really what we're about showcasing. So, I mean, for us, you know, at the Midwest Bitcoin Summit, one thing that we did early on, because, you know, as we're reaching out to all these big names and the speakers, everybody asks, you know, or a lot of these larger names, they ask us, okay, yeah, we'll come, but pay us X amount of money. And we were like sitting there debating like, oh, do we do this? Do we not? And at the end of the day, we kind of just went with our gut, and our gut tells us we don't want speakers there that aren't willing to be there because they're a part of the mission. You know, we don't want someone to be there because they're being paid to do so, because it's their job. We want people that are aligned in the mission of what we're doing, and they're aligned in the mission of what Bitcoin is going to do for the world. That's the focus. So like
and
every single speaker.
I love it. Sorry to cut you off. I love that because the ticket prices are low to allow for inclusivity.
Yeah.
For people to be able to join, you know, people that other conferences that jack up the prices and then they have so much more money per attendee that they could pay these speakers to come in. But that's not what this is about. It's not to get the most influential speaker. It's not to get the person who's considered a celebrity. It's to get the people who are there and include more people to come and be able to connect, because that's the whole point. It's like, why does this conference need to exist? Why can't people just in the Midwest find out about Bitcoin and cannabis online and find out what's going on? Because like you said, you wouldn't have found the person building that wallet. And you wouldn't have found all these other people that are building in the Midwest if you're not meeting with, like, you actually collaborate. And it's that idea of, you know, a single person can't make a difference, but when you come together collectively, you can make a big impact.
Yeah. I mean, like, the thing, it's true across the board, right? So if you, you know, if you charge high dollar amounts on the tickets, like it's $500 just to get a GA ticket. It's, you know, $1,500 to get a business ticket. It's $10,000 for a VIP ticket. What you're doing is you're limiting your reach, right? You're getting people that are willing to go. You're more than likely getting the same people to go to the same event year over year. You get this echo chamber. You don't have a lot of like new entrants into that market. And so you're just like kind of, you're gatekeeping, but you're also stagnating yourself. And so, yeah, like we're keeping it very affordable for people to come to this so that we can get new people into the room. And maybe that seems on the outside looking in like, oh, maybe it's going to be a lesser event. No, it's not. It's going to be the same caliber, same quality of like any Bitcoin conference you've ever gone to, and probably better than most of them actually. So how are we, you know, really doing that? Well, we self-finance this whole thing. We're not sponsored by some big name corporation that's like front running this whole, or, you know, they're not like backing us or anything. This is like, we're burning holes in our own pocket because we love this. And like, I think it's much needed. I think it's a great business model. I think it serves a great mission. But you know, on that same front, if you bring a lot of retail individuals into the space, you're serving the retail companies, right? If the retail companies do B2B connections with other businesses, you have a stronger B2B business networking connection. So if you start to like allow more entrance into the marketplace and you have a better network because of that, it trickles all the way up into the institutional level. So, you know, this may seem like it's very retail focused, but we have an entire business and institutional level track as well. So we're attracting everybody from people that don't know anything about Bitcoin to people that have $5 in Bitcoin, to the most maxi Bitcoin enthusiasts that are going to be coming to this. And then obviously all the cannabis folks. So, you know, it's really, I think you stagnate businesses when you start to try to focus on profits more than the mission. And, right. You know, that's true with even our sponsorships and our exhibiting costs. So those are a tenth of the cost of the majority of the conferences. And this is how you build something special, is you don't squeeze as much as you can out of the people that are like helping make it special.
That is beautiful. You know, that's definitely a Midwestern thing. I feel like it just seems like you are doing it. You're not trying to get wealthy. You're burning holes in your own pocket to do this thing because you believe in not just helping more people understand Bitcoin, but also to help the cannabis industry thrive and to show them that there's another way to be able to transact and not have to pay gigantic fees to a middleman. But it's just amazing to think that, you know, I don't know, it's just amazing to think about how the amount of people that would be coming in. And when you think about conferences, when they charge a lot per ticket, it's almost like a kind of like just to show that they have, I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for, like a level
like prestige.
Of prestige. Yeah. So to show a level of prestige, like only people that could afford these tickets are here and we want the people that could afford it. Well, that's not what Bitcoin is about. Bitcoin is about the people that need it and the people that need to save their families and save, you know, people and sending money to other countries like your friend, you know, and people that need actually the people that need Bitcoin more are the people that wouldn't be able to afford those tickets, you know, that wouldn't be able to buy an airplane ticket and get a hotel room, you know, and in Vegas or something. So, yeah, you're just trying to, you know, pay for speaker. It's just the wrong idea. You know, it's I just love that it's a completely different shift from the typical conference.
Yeah. Well, and also we are Bitcoin only. I turned down yesterday. I won't name anybody. Very nice gentleman. Great human, I'm sure. I turned him down. He wanted to bring his company in as a sponsor, and they, you know, have a product that is backed on, or it's built on like the Ethereum network. And I told him politely, we can't do that. We won't do that. And this is a Bitcoin only conference. You're welcome to come and attend and everything, but we will never take a sponsor that is not Bitcoin, you know, and it's not being hateful. It's not me being mean. You know, the point is we focus on the signal. Like we are not here to serve some private interest altcoin that, you know, doesn't care about fixing the world. You know, Bitcoin doesn't have a marketing team. It doesn't have a CEO. It doesn't have anything to like promote it. You know, this is grassroots as it gets. This asset is growing organically because it solves the problems the world is facing, and it, you know, problems that need to be solved for us to have a better life. You know, like it's a very dark world without Bitcoin, in my opinion.
Right.
So, you know, we will be Bitcoin only forever. You know, and this is extremely important to us. So high signal always. We will keep the shitcoins out. I can't control the attendees, but yeah, they'll never see a shitcoin company.
Mm-hmm. That's so amazing, because that's one thing that people, you know, as Bitcoiners, you start to think like when there's a bull market and the price is running up, that's all you're going to end up seeing. And people will kind of like sell their soul to be able to get more money. But I love that that is not the ethos of you. And knowing you, I know that that is, you are about helping the world and making a better future and creating a better world, which also brings me to the other thing that you've built, because it's the same idea. And we're so lucky to have you, first of all, as a Midwestern Bitcoiner, as somebody who's bringing people together, as somebody who's creating more of a accessibility for all people. But what you've built with the Bitcoin Scholarship Foundation, you will be speaking about that at the summit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. I mean, the Midwest Bitcoin Summit and the Bitcoin Scholarship Foundation, they run in parallel, you know. I guess the Midwest Bitcoin Summit supports the Bitcoin Scholarship Foundation perpetually. So 10% of our profits will go to the Bitcoin Scholarship Foundation every single year. And we can unpack that. But yeah, I mean, you know, Midwest Bitcoin Summit is about revitalizing the Midwest region because it's been decimated, right? And the Bitcoin Scholarship Foundation stems out of that experience, my own experience, where all these Rust Belt cities are full of communities of people that generationally are just like stuck and hopeless. And like, there's just no jobs and the crime is getting worse and the gangs are getting worse and the drug use and just the poverty is immense. And so as I lived in these cities in the Midwest, I always questioned like, how the hell are you going to like solve this problem? Because whether you actually have empathy for these kids, or you have empathy for these communities, or you don't want those communities to come into your community and make your life even worse, you know, and it's a selfish decision. Whether you have empathy or selflessness, or selfishness rather, you know, you should care about the poverty class, because it is a problem that needs to be solved. And how do you do it? I mean, that's why we started the Bitcoin Scholarship Foundation. And I think you do it through two ways. It's education and opportunity. And, you know, we're providing education from ages 5 to 18 on financial literacy. And that's a very comprehensive program being built out. It'll be like four different pillars of, you know, what is money? What is Bitcoin? What is economics? And what is the history of money and the impacts of, you know, monetary systems? And then that'll be a you know, repeated on a cyclic basis every single year, incrementally getting more advanced for those students. And then the second prong of this approach is opportunity. And a lot of the reason that the Midwest has communities that are deeply impoverished is because the opportunity has left the United States economy. Those jobs, those manufacturing companies have been, you know, offshored in some other foreign market in China, India, Mexico, wherever it may be, where the labor is cheaper. So they've lost their opportunity. This has decimated the economy. How do you give them back that opportunity? Well, it's not bringing the jobs back, because that's a huge, heavy lift. It takes a long time. It needs to make sense. And it doesn't really make sense, because our labor market is extremely expensive relative to the rest of the world. So what do? You give them opportunity in the best form of capital. The best form of capital is Bitcoin. And so this is where it's very unique, where we give each child in the program $500 in Bitcoin, and that is time locked until the age of 25. At the age of 25, conditionally, it's theirs as long as they complete the financial literacy program and they do not have a felony offense on their record. And so, like, there's so much to like go into, but that's the concept, right?
That's beautiful. And I love that it's built on Bitcoin, because anything that is built on, you know, that's the reason we call them shit coins and we don't trust, you know, crypto, and why you won't take sponsorships from other coins and companies like that, because you can't trust it. And if you're building something for the future and you want to see a better future, you don't want to see something that can get manipulated, changed, controlled. So the way that this Bitcoin scholarship fund is built, you have those conditions for the kids, and you also have it built on something that is immutable. It is unchangeable. It is, it has proven the test of time. So it hasn't failed in that way. And it doesn't have some corporation or company that can change it. So I love that it's built on Bitcoin, and it has, you know, again, there's more to go into on why it's secured between, you know, how it's secured for the future, time locked. And yes, for people that don't understand that, that would be part of your journey, you know, so if you take that journey, you will find out all about that stuff. But I love that it's built on Bitcoin, and I love that you're Bitcoin only and building something for the future, because you're right. If you want to see a better future and you don't believe in a widening wealth gap, and you actually don't want to see the world get worse as far as people sitting up on a hill and looking down at everybody, that just reminds you of the Hunger Games or something. I just think of like those two opposite worlds, and that's not the future we want. We don't want to have people who are the wealth gap widening and growing and people just climbing up the ladder higher and other people just barely surviving. You know, that's not the world you want. And this is a bridge to help. First of all, even the donation part of it, you're donating for each child. And I love that, you know, so many people donate that are wealthy, let's say, or anybody that donates, you get a tax break, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people are donating anyway to some sort of charity. And that's my whole thing. When I explain the Bitcoin Scholarship Foundation to people, you know, I explain it in a way where there's so many charities that people donate to that you cannot verify where this money is going. You don't know that it's actually helping any sort of cause that you believe in. A lot of that money could just be stolen before it ever gets to the cause. So anything built on Bitcoin, it's going to, you know, help these kids' future. They will have that Bitcoin one day, and they will be able to learn about the finances along the way and learn about what money truly is. And it'll give them a better future and a good starting off point in life. It's just such a, like, the perfect cause. I think all charities should actually be built on Bitcoin.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. Like, the auditability of it is so nice, because like many of the 501c3s, it's so hard to understand where is your money going, right? And like, they're supposed to report, you know, and do internal audits and, you know, deliver that information to the IRS. But at the end of the day, like you as a donor, you really have no idea. So our concept is, you know, fortunately we have AI that's kind of unfolding, and we can use agentic type of processes to manage a lot of this nonprofit activity and the organizational side of things. You know, the idea is we take in and use about 90% of the funds from the donors, and that goes directly into the Bitcoin foundation, right? Into like the actual vault for all the kids. And so, you know, 90% would be very high, you know, operationally. If we could live and survive off of 10%, that would be our target. But like 90% of the money coming in, so if you got $1 million, $900,000 is trapped on the Bitcoin blockchain, verifiable, auditable, you know, and it's there for minimum 7 years. You know, if you're giving it to an 18-year-old, like that is locked for 7 years. For a 5-year-old, 20 years, right? And so this is like such a unique way of like being able to track and see where your money's going. And if it's not a heavy lift, maybe you can even use AI to show where your dollars went and what kid is receiving it. And, you know, like you can kind of watch it grow with them, you know?
Oh, that'd be amazing. Yeah. That's like how that whole like adopting a child thing.
Just the, you know, Bitcoin Scholarship Foundation and, you know, being able to track the Bitcoin, and yes, a lot of nonprofits are hard to track.
Yes. And I think about the children and just being able to almost like, if there was a way to actually say, oh, this is the child I saved, and just see how they're doing, and almost like be able to, they could write notes one day to their, whoever their donor is, even if you wanted to be anonymous, and just be like, thank you for doing this for me. You know, this actually changed my life or something. You know, it's like, it makes you feel good. And that's the whole thing about the Bitcoin space. Everything that's done in the Bitcoin space, and a lot of the stuff in the cannabis space too, with the same ethos, is it's fulfilling. You know, people feel good connecting with each other and spending their time in a way that feels real, and it feels like genuine connections and learning about people, and it just feels very authentic. And I love that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and the idea is like, we set these children up generationally, kid after kid after kid, you know, just like every cohort coming out of this program, they're going to have enough, you know, USD wise, enough Bitcoin that if they need it in whatever way, they can, you know, they can put a down payment on a house, they can get out of their living situation. If they're in like a very crime infested neighborhood, they can go to college, they can start a business, you know, like it's going to give them real opportunity. And for the economic regions where these children are living predominantly, that are like decimated and they're high poverty locations, it's like true revitalization for those regions, because those same kids that grow up to be young adults, a percentage of them will stay in those areas and they will spend into those economies. And, you know, like it's just like this beautiful model that plays out, whether, you know, it's good or bad, like however they spend the money, if it's productive or unproductive, it's a net win, because the economy locally wins, or the child or the young adult at that time, like, you know, directly wins. And it's just beautiful, you know. And we have Unchained, who's like one of the best in the business, as our you know, custodian. So, you know, we have the master vault for the foundation, and then every child will have a sub vault for themselves. And so they'll have access on their smartphone or their laptop or their iPad, whatever it may be, if they have that, where they can visibly see, you know, like, this is my Bitcoin balance. And that's part of like the psychological construct of this model, which is, they have the same experience you and I have, which is, you know, Bitcoin's crashing. Oh my God, I'm terrified. I'm so scared. Why is this happening? Or Bitcoin's ripping to the moon and you're like, holy cow, like this is insane. I'm getting more wealthy every single second. Why is this happening? And that question of why is this happening gives that child, the child that's in deep need, you know, living in a very bad situation, it gives them the emotional connection to ask the question why and care about the financial literacy education. Because like, how do you get a kid? Because I'm a normal kid that grew up really fortunate, you know, middle-class family, no problems really. And I didn't care about school. So how do you get a kid that has a lot of problems in his life to care about the financial literacy education you're like providing to them every single month? Well, you give them skin in the game on an asset that is going to be the best performing asset of all time.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then I love that they could watch it and not be able to sell it or trade it, so that they could see what it's doing over time, and then see what holding on to it does through time, instead of having access to be able to sell this thing when they, you know, when they think the price is up or whatever it is. And what I also love about Bitcoin price being what it is today, around 60,000, like hovering around that, I love seeing things like this. I love talking to you, because you are showing the world that, you know, the Bitcoin price is down. You're building things in the Bitcoin space, connecting two industries together. You know, you're a builder and you're doing it during a time when people think that they see the Bitcoin price not knowing much about it and just thinking that everyone's running away and people are just like, you know, struggling and holding on to whatever Bitcoin, but you're still building, you know, during a time when, and I've seen so much building happening now that I've connected with other Midwest Bitcoiners. There's building going on, you know, from even the Chicago Bitcoin Collective that we're part of. It's, you know, the Bitcoin restaurant co-working space. That's amazing to see. And it makes me so happy to see that, okay, it's not that bear market vibe where everybody is just like holed up in their homes and everyone's sad that the price is down and no one's doing anything. Like, you guys are building things.
Yeah.
And I'm here to support every one of these moves and amplify it and share it with the world because I'm excited. This is a very exciting time. This is a time where we should share all the amazing things that are happening during a time where people would think that we are like not doing this. They would think that we're, you know, it almost seems sometimes when the price is down that people that know you're a Bitcoiner, they're like, oh, I shouldn't probably talk to them about it because they're probably sad right now. But it's like, no, we're always excited. And it's even more empowering when you find other people like you who are building.
Yeah. You know, I mean, obviously some people will get depressed about the Bitcoin price, but like at the same time, if you know you understand what Bitcoin is, you truly understand it and you have deep conviction, you thank God every single time it dumps because you get to buy it cheaper and you like, you know, you still have opportunity to buy more. And if you're working and you have a job and you have cash flow coming in, like then you're doing fine. You know, like if you're trying to live off your Bitcoin, I'm assuming then, you know, it might be a little stressful for you, but I think most people are working class and, you know, like this is a blessing. Every time it dumps, I'm happy as can be because I get to buy more cheaply, right? And if it rips, cool, that's fun too. But yeah, I think, you know, you see the signal in the bear markets. You get to see who's really there, who's really convicted, who's really here to build something, not just the charlatans who are, you know, riding the momentum of euphoria, because it's really easy to do that. It's really easy to be, you know, the guy that says he knows everything, you know, he can predict the future when the price is ripping and everyone wants to become rich. But when the fear hits the, you know, hits everybody and when like there's blood in the streets and everybody's crying, the people that are like the most stable, those are the people you should follow. You know, they are the true leaders, the people that build. And there's a lot of them.
And that's why it's a great time to go now. This September is when the Midwest Bitcoin Summit is happening. Yeah. And it's literally the best time because you're able to see the real ones. Like you're able to see the people who are building and the people who are here and sharing hope and connecting with each other and building more. So you're actually getting to meet the best people who are here for it. And just to think that there's that many attendees going on just from the Bitcoin half of it, of the conference. And for the first ever one that you're doing in the Midwest it's such a huge number of people. And it's just the bear market vibes, you know, that are going on. And this is going to be amazing, you know? So I just think that this is the best time that you want to go. This is when you want to actually see what Bitcoin is really about during a year like this.
Yeah, even at like, you know, I went to the Bitcoin Las Vegas. We were both there in Las Vegas this year. Relative to the previous year in 2025, this year was better in Vegas. And the reason why is because the signal and the quality of the individual that comes to a bear market conference, they're top notch. Like they're the people that aren't going anywhere. Those are the people that have been there for a long time. They are the most like knowledgeable people, the most like emotionally stable people. So like I had a great time in Vegas this year, but last year it was just a blur, you know, and it was three times the people were in the middle of the bull market. And I could not tell you any relationship I made. You know, I can barely remember what happened, not because I was drinking, just because it was so much chaos. So like the intimacy of a bear market is maybe something that's underrated or not even like really talked about. But yeah, the people that you'll see at the Midwest Bitcoin Summit are those who are deeply convicted, ultra, you know, high conviction Bitcoiners that are there for the right reasons, not just the euphoria kind of like, you know, retail investor that's in everything, including, you know, all your favorite shit coins.
What an epic time to launch it. I mean, that is, it's almost like you subconsciously knew that this would be the time that you...
No.
Somehow, no. Like, I don't know, for whatever reason, it worked out. But, you know, just thinking that that is a really cool aspect of it. You know, just thinking that those are the kind of people that are going to be there, and you're the kind of person building it. So it's just so exciting. So that'll be September. Is it September 22nd? That is 23rd.
Yeah. So September 23rd and 24th for exhibitors and sponsors, speakers, everybody should show up on the 22nd, which I would assume you would anyways, because, you know, we start the next morning. But we have the VIP night for all exhibitors, sponsors, and speakers and VIP guests if you buy a VIP ticket. So we'll be having our large VIP night at Parlay Sporting Club, which is a very nice venue right across the street from the convention center. But yeah, then, you know, day one is the 23rd, day two is the 24th. On day one, on the 23rd, which is Wednesday, we have our massive after party, which we've, you know, now termed it, entitled it Catalyst, which makes a lot of sense. And this is at COSI. So this is a mutual after party. COSI is the Columbus Science and Industry Museum. So it's like this pretty cool venue. It's like 1.5 million square feet. There's a back pavilion right on the Riverwalk, and we'll have like tons of stuff going on inside and outside. Massive, you know, exhibitors and sponsored tents on the outside with a DJ, drinks, dancing. On the inside, tons of different activations as you walk through the museum, you know, plenty of different companies to engage with. And it's going to be a co-hosted event. So it's Midwest Bitcoin Summit and OCHBS, the Cannabis Conference. So it's just this blend again. So like the conferences are blending, but the major after party is blended as well. So it's gonna be very, very cool. You know, we got some pretty crazy stuff going on. I don't know. This is where it gets fun, because Lenny's like this, he's a very creative genius kind of guy, but he always likes to bring in, you know, different DJs like Sir Mix, like MJ, Machine Gun Kelly's, you know, DJ is coming in, I believe, or at least he typically does. And then this year, he just told me this yesterday, we have a special celebrity guest for the COSI event, which is the guy from Superbad, McLovin.
That's so funny. That's awesome.
Yeah, so he always has like, you know, special guests that are like celebrities. But yeah, McLovin's going to be there. So if you want to come and say hi and get a picture with him, like that, he's going to be chilling with us.
That's awesome. So how much are tickets for this after party?
I believe we're pricing, I think we're pricing them at $70.
Okay.
Like it's still kind of like in limbo, but $70 for the after party ticket. And like historically, Lenny's always done this for his cannabis conference at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And like, it's been a massive party there. It's a great venue. Really, really cool. But like, he gets 1,000 people at this party just from his side alone. So, you know, our target is to like match that and have this be like this massive 2,000 person after party, which expands 1.5 million square feet inside, and then this massive backside party right on the skyline and the river walk of like Columbus. It's going to be beautiful.
That's a great time of year too, September. So yeah, it's just like fall is perfect. I cannot wait. I'm going to share the link. So the link is down below. So it's in the pinned comments, it's in the description of the video. So click the link, get your tickets. I have my referral link in there too, so you guys could receive a discount on tickets as well. And also they could find the after party tickets on the website also.
Yeah, they're going to be live probably mid-June. So we're buttoning up everything with the venue, all the, you know, contractors, making sure we understand costs so that we don't like kill ourselves. But yeah, I believe it's going to be like $70, $75 for tickets, and that'll be live in June.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me today, Andrew. I cannot wait. This is so exciting. And make sure you guys come for the first ever Midwest Bitcoin/Cannabis Combo Summit. This is amazing. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Stacey. It was fun. Let's do it again sometime. And I'll see you soon.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Thanks.